We're going to open the Senate Revenue Committee. Oh, there you are. I was wondering where we're down to two now. What I'd like to do is go into work session on Senate Bill 549.
We need one more person.
We lack, and I'd like for this bill, since it's of enough significance, that we should have more than just one more.
So why don't you announce in there that we need a quorum?
We are looking for three state senators to join
two
us.
Two rural and one suburban senator.
Can we deputize somebody?
To hearing room A.
But as we wait, Olivia, if you could come up, or Fred, or both, I definitely have a question on Section 2.
You actually read the bill, Mr. Chairman.
You have my bill.
As
okay. Good afternoon, Fred and
good afternoon.
Olivia. Did you guys have a few things you might want to add before? The question that I had on Section 2 was, Mr. Gallagher brought up the point, and I thought it was a good one a couple days ago on Section 2, and Section 3, line 9, that if the Act is repealed by January 2nd, 2014, are we creating a window here where TriMet would really have to act by January 1st of next year, which then would kind of avoid the conversation that we had about waiting until the recession is over and doing it at the appropriate time.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. Response to a question by Senator Starr at the hearing, I indicated, I think the example was, if it started in 06, would it go through 06 or through 16? My answer was yes. We've gone back and talked both with the Legislative Council as well as our own General Counsel at TriMet, and we believe that this language works perfectly for that. That is, the ordinance that must be put in place that starts that process needs to be within that time frame. But once that ordinance has been passed, that the repeal that would be on line 9 would, when that time came, that is January 2nd of 14, that the authority in Section 1, which is really the amount, the total amount, still stands and does not affect that ability to be able to continue that. So the short answer is it does not affect it. If it came in 05 or in 06, it would, the 10-year period that is controlled here could go past the sunset date of 14.
Great. We are in work session on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
we had a discussion with that 5 minutes.
We have not.
I would move the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 549.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 549. Elizabeth, do you want to tell us what they do?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with Legislative Revenue. The dash 5 just specifies that the district board must adopt an ordinance increasing the tax authority if the economy in the district has recovered from any downturn. And this is reflected then in any regional employment and income growth. So that's what you have in the dash 5.
And this, Mr. Chair, this is in... In Section 1 of the bill creates a new subsection 8, so it affects the opportunity for the board to actually adopt the ordinance that would increase the tax. I had a question at one point about whether it would make more sense to have these amendments introduced or in the bill in Section 2 as it relates to the timing of the increase. And I'm unclear whether or not, because what we're looking at is when the board actually has the increase go into effect, and the trigger that is in the dash 5 amendments, does it belong in Section 2 as opposed to Section 1? Because in Section 2 it's where really talks about the phase-in of the tax. Obviously, the ordinance that is passed that's dealt with in Section 1. Section 2 deals with the timing Do you wish to comment on that?
Chairman, Senator Starr, I would. By being in Section 1, what it does is it controls all actions that are taken under Section 2. But I think the advantage of being in Section 1 is that when Section 2 is repealed by the sunset, it stays in place. And so the issue of it going past 14, for example, because it may be started in 06, likewise, that language would still be applying to that or any other time the TriMet board took action. I should say, by the way, as you heard from my board president who testified on Thursday, they and the other board members would welcome this kind of language. I mean, this is exactly what they intend to be able to do, and they would welcome this direction. But I would think that it's better to have it in one because it does apply across at all times, not just to the it would clearly apply to the language in Section 2, but it would apply after Section 2 has been repealed.
Yes, Senator Starr. I want to run through a proposed scenario. We passed this with the Dash 5 amendments in the bill. Our economy, for whatever reason, continues to bump along the bottom here, and we don't see the kind of recovery we hope to see. We are getting into, let's say, 2005. And there begins to be an economic recovery. The board then has an ordinance. They can adopt the findings that shows that the state's pulling itself out of the situation we're in. They pass the ordinance that starts the trigger on a 10-year window, upon which over the life of that 10-year time, so it would be from 2005 to 2015. The tax would ultimately go up one hundredth of a percent. Is that correct?
Yes, Chairman, Senator Starr. They would do it by ordinance, and that would be how they would be able to do it. The law, all I want to do is be clear on, the law in Section 2 does allow that they could hypothetically have in some years zero and maximum 0.2, but that would be the only modification I'd make to what you would say. One last thing I would say is the difference would be that if it's in Section 1, that chain or that ordinance that would be there for the increase, the hundredth of a percent in 15, if it's in Section 1, the language of the 5-5 amendments, it would apply to that. If it's in Section 2, it would have been repealed on January 2nd of 14, and therefore would no longer be there. And I'm sure my board would be at that future date still responsible and sensitive to that issue, but I just want to point out how it would work differently if it were in Section 1.
Further discussion?
Just to follow up again. The the board takes one action to set this whole thing in motion, or at every point that the increase, the small increase increments are increased over the 10-year plan, is there additional ordinances that have to pass at each point?
Section 2, Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, as I have asked both my counsel and we have talked with legislative counsel as well, the Section 2 allows for it to be done either way, that is, either by one ordinance or by multiple ordinances.
Further discussion? Any objections to the Dash 5 amendments? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I move Dash 7 amendments from Senator Hannon. Mm-hmm. It requires that the payroll increase cannot happen until the baseball field is built.
I'm going to roll that out of order.
Okay, fine.
Given that there are no Dash 7.
Just a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late. I was researching the fact that Pete Rose may, in fact, be getting into the Hall of Fame, depending on how this argument about gambling and baseball comes
out. That'll settle that argument.
So we, Senator Farrelly, we have just adopted the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 549. We're in work session. And we are about to entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think the witness would feel terribly cheated today if I didn't ask him to explain or to answer a question I brought up at the last public hearing on this bill, which had to do with the per ride cost on the light rail lines. So I would like to ask that question, Mr. Chairman.
We'd like an answer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Farioli, would you like to be more specific, or should I just try to answer what I think is your question?
Oh, I think, Mr. Chairman, he should just launch into whatever explanation you think
he wants. It's always safer to start talking.
What I think prompted this was the issue of, as I had in the opening presentation on Tuesday, indicated that on average our Lyft ride, that's the individualized elderly and disabled door-to-door service, not bus stop-to-bus stop service, average about $16 per ride. And I think the question was, what is that comparable in the rest of the system, both, I think, bus and light rail? One would hope that this was just a very simple answer. Let me give you the very simple answer and then kind of the caveats that are associated with it. In FY02, when one looks at it, and you can look at it in kind of two different ways, but at operating costs that are probably most realistic, we would consider that the actual boarding cost per boarding ride on rail is about $1.51 per ride, operating cost per boarding ride, and on the bus side, $2.04. Now, the one thing what I'm going to do is that does not include, that includes all the kind of costs that are associated with operating it. It's the operators, it's the mechanics, it's our dispatch, it's other things. What it does not include is the general administration that's associated with running, in this case, TriMet, an agency. If we have that number in, those numbers increase from the $1.51 to $2.16 on rail, and on the bus side to $2.48 from $2.04. Now, the distinction between this, again, one last caveat is that because we are a tax-exempt entity, and most taxable entities, if they are figuring their capital costs, you think about it in depreciation terms, because obviously they're having that as a part of their tax bill. Because we're tax-exempt, this does not include the capital costs because we don't depreciate. So that last caveat. Has that got to the answer?
Mr. Chairman, that's precisely the kind of comparison that I was looking for. I think all of us have seen articles by various think tanks relative to the cost of these rides. I think most people realize that public transit does not recapture from the ridership the total cost of the ride, whether it's capital costs included or not included. But I think taxpayers need to know and have some sense of value invested for value received. And that simply is the reason I asked the question, and the answer did get to the issue that I wanted to put on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Which may give all of you, but particularly Senator Farioli, a little more comfort is that when we look at our peers, some wouldn't say that we ought to be comparing ourselves to peers, but if you look at all the different systems across the country other than the five bigs, New York City, Chicago, Philly, Boston, D.C., we are generally in the highest decile, highest 10% in terms of both cost per ride, seats being filled, those other efficiency measures. We do very well compared to all those other systems and generally lose out only to something like San Francisco, and that's only the Muni system, which is a very compact part of it. It's not the other 16 providers of that service.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions, comments? Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Bill 549 is before us.
We have a motion on the table, don't we, to already send it to the floor?
No, we don't have a motion. We need a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill 549 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has moved Senate Bill 549 to the floor with a do-pass. Any discussion? Tara, please call the roll.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Corcoran?
Aye.
Rango?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Ferriello?
Aye.
Eckert?
Aye. Bill passes. Senator Starr, will you carry that bill?
Certainly.
We will next go to Senate Bill 556 and open a public hearing. And Senator Walker, we apologize that you had to wait a little bit there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you want Mazin to explain the bill, or do you want to use that?
No, he can.
Mazin, what does this bill do?
Mr. Chair, this bill looks at the amounts of interest that gets paid to a refund on a property tax refund when that property tax refund occurs. In statutes at this time, it's defined by statute as 1% a month, and in simple terms, which makes it 12% a year. And it seems that this bill would take that percentage from the 12% into a more market-oriented, connected to commercial bank prime rate type of 12-month period rate.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Vicki Walker, State Senator for District 7, and with me is John Brown, who's a licensed real estate appraiser in Eugene, and he will speak when I'm finished here. Mr. Brown and I had an occasion to have lunch together sometime several months ago. I'd seen him in court. He testifies in bankruptcy court from time to time. And so we had lunch, and he talked about this issue to me and felt that there were the counties were losing a lot of money because we're paying interest out at 12% per year on property tax appeals when the current interest rate is pretty darn low in banks, credit unions. It's about 5%, 1%, 2% if you're extremely lucky. One of the problems with our interest rate, so that it makes it a pretty cushy deal when you get a refund on your property taxes and they're going to pay you 12%. And I'll let Mr. Brown explain to you a couple of cases we've had in Lane County that have resulted in significant refund interest rates. So this bill aims to tie it to the prime rate and so that it changes every year, so we don't have to keep coming back and asking the statute to be changed. Sometimes when we draft our statutes, they're drafted for the time, and certainly economies change during that time, interest rates, and I think it's more appropriate if we were to tie it to a rate that changes based on the economy. I think we could really help our counties with some of the lack of funding, particularly when the state takes things away because we're in trouble. And I will let Mr. Brown continue to tell you about why this is such a good bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you. For the record, my name is John H. Brown. My business address is 1260 Charnelton Street in Eugene, 97401. I'm speaking in favor of this bill for two reasons. Number one is that it's an opportunity, in my opinion, that you can increase revenue to taxing districts without a cost to the taxpayer, without sacrificing a program or an individual, and also to correct an inequity. I guarantee you that if pass rates right now were 10% and you were paying 2%, there'd be a line at the door for people seeing you're not paying us enough. It's not very popular to come before you and say you're paying us too much, and I only represent one individual, but I believe that you are paying too much. Nowhere, in my opinion, can you get 12% on your money or 1% per month. Some interest should be paid, in my opinion, because it's a lost opportunity. When people pay excess taxes, it's money that's tied up that they could have ordinarily been put to use some other place. And I think it should be fair and equitable, but I think it should work both ways. The charges that you administer against delinquent taxes, I do not think should be tied to this in any way, because that, to me, is the cost of administering, holding, and disposition of assets. Many times I see where people will have a property that becomes polluted or becomes encumbered for some reason or another, and they'll just let it go for taxes. And that's a huge burden to the taxing districts to deal with that, to advertise and sell, to administer, to hold. And I believe that the current charges for that are in no way or should in no way be tied to what the refund interest is. There is a consideration that hopefully, because I know there are people in the audience that are with the technical aspects of this that should be given consideration, and that is that currently if you are successful in an appeal, you're sometimes allowed to go back prior years. And I think you should somehow address the issue of what interest rate should be applicable. So if I had an appeal today and the data value was 1102 and I qualified to go back to 1101 and 1100, what interest rate would be applicable to those two prior years' refunds? I'm not quite sure that that's been addressed totally. A couple examples we have in Lane County, just to tell you what this might have done. We had just one appeal on one account, one property. Their refund was $1,766,000, of which the interest, just for that one short period of time, was $123,000. Had this been at the market rate interest, we could have hired another police officer or another teacher and provided an after-school program. For the year 2002 in Lane County alone, we had $2,664,000 in delinquent interest paid, but we also had $268,000 in delinquent refunds. For the year 2001, it was $2,439,000 in delinquent interest, but we paid back $426,000 in interest. That's almost eight police officers. In a community where we're short 52, I would hope that we would be able to pass something that would allow it to be equitable to both sides. With that, I will close my testimony, but I am available to answer any questions if you feel so. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Hannon.
Does this appear, you listed out a couple cases, but does this appear to be a persistent problem of interest refunds and the money that is being paid back to these appellants?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I believe that it's not a problem. The part of the issue, particularly in our county, that I've done statistics on how many appeals are filed in different counties. Our appeal ratio in our particular county exceeds other counties by sometimes two to five times the rate. The reason being is as individuals allowed to take contingent fees on these appeals, county taxation departments are woefully understaffed. Even if you don't win at the current level, you lose at the BOP, the Board of Property Tax Appeals, you just take it to the magistrate's level, and rarely does the county administration have the staff time or the resources to confront you at that level. You win by default, and you automatically get the refund. And when people don't have to, you can present evidence, and in the business of value is some an opinion, it's not a fact to be found.
Well, the reason I was asking, Mr. Chairman, the reason I was asking you is that, on the other hand, those that underpay, are their interest being charged to them, and what is the interest rate that is charged to them on their appeals case when their property is evaluated higher and they were not paying the full amount? Do those occur as well?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I do not believe that if there's been an error or omission, if there's omitted property, that you have the ability to go back and pay the omitted tax without a penalty if you meet that in a period of time. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I believe that is the case.
Okay. Now, the other question I wanted to ask you is this the extreme because of the size of these types of cases? You mentioned a case of $1 million and the interest on it was $120,000 or so. Is it because of the abnormal size of these cases that are being taken to contested hearings that this problem is creeping up here?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I do not believe so. It's the many appeals are filed because of the ability to attain the refund. The interest amount is irrelevant to the value being contested. The example I gave you was Hyundai in Eugene. They appealed, and the basis of their appeal was primarily on their equipment.
I see.
And then they refunded, like I say, $1,766,000 on one appeal.
Because I'm trying to find out, does there appear to be a problem in the county assessor's office, and you're indicating there is, based upon lack of staff to handle these types of cases, that they get overwhelmed by these appeals and they win, and then they have to pay back the money, as I understand your statement.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, I believe that is. I know that if I'm doing a tax appeal, which currently I'm doing several, I might spend a week preparing for that appeal, where I believe county staff has probably 15 minutes.
Okay.
And there's an inequity.
Okay, thank you.
So the heart of this seems to be is that 12%. Is that the correct? And interestingly enough, you know, we have Senate Bill 229 next, which is the flip side of that coin, which is the other side that Senator Hannon was addressing when it was undervalued. But I guess the only question, I think this is a pretty intriguing idea, is do we need to have some form of disincentive on the county, and does the prime rate provide that disincentive, or do you really need to put a stronger, and 12%, some would argue, is that strong disincentive to not over, or I guess underestimate the tax liability?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, I believe the interest rate is not a penalty to the county. I believe it's a compensation for lost opportunity and for the requirement of having to go through the process. It's similar to me as what happens in eminent domain when your property is taken, the money is placed in the court. It's zero interest. But to me, I don't believe the 12% is a penalty to the county. I believe it's a. It's been just as it was initiated, I believe, historically to reflect the market and lost opportunity. And because now markets have changed, I don't even believe you can get 1% if you put the money in the bank.
Mm-hmm. That was going to actually be my second question. Do you know how we arrived at the 12%? You touched on it.
Mr. Chair, I do not have the history of that. I do know that the differential between the 1% per month and the 1.3% per month was to help offset the administration when I believe 47 and 5 came in. And I believe in that time frame is when the interest rates changed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I wanted to respond to your question because that was a question in my mind. If all these people are winning appeals in Lane County, does that mean that our assessor's not properly assessing taxes and realistically reflecting what the tax is? And I don't think that's the case. I think Mr. Brown has touched on why you're seeing so many appeals. It's a great boondoggle for attorneys who are involved in taking on these cases because they're contingent fees. As Mr. Brown indicated, the county assessor's office is very low staffed, and they just don't have the time to go to all these appeals. And I think that's why you're seeing so many of these. And while Hyundai, which is now called Hynix, is an unusual case because of the dollar amount involved, what was so frustrating about Hynix is that the city of Eugene gave them a property tax. Well, they gave them a tax break, and then they turned around and sued the county for their valuation, and they won over $1 million. So it was extremely frustrating to see that happen. And our county assessor, Jim Gangle, is supportive of this bill. And I understand from talking with John Phillips with the Department of Revenue and with your legislative staff that some of the counties are concerned about compounding the interest, that they still compute interest by hand rather than through some calculated program. And there was a discussion about changing that to simple interest rather than compound interest. I really don't have a position on that.
Mazin.
Mr. Chair, that's part of the issue that the fiscal office had in trying to estimate what the fiscal impact of the bill, because they were not sure how to, at this point, estimate all the costs right. that the different counties will go through mm-hmm. programming and doing that.
Mm-hmm. So we should hold off on that, get a sense of where the committee is at on this concept, and then mm-hmm. we can spend staff time if we need to amend it so that you can actually get a good fiscal on it. But at least for now, just the concept itself, I think, is the idea to see how receptive this committee is to it.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thank Chair, you. Members of the committee.
Diane Belt and Gary Bartholomew.
Good afternoon, committee members, Mr. Chair, for the record. My name is Diane Belt. I work for Washington County Tax Department, and I'm also the representative for the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. I can answer a few questions that were brought up. One of them, the 12% interest, probably came into effect about 1975. I started in 78, and it was at 12% at that time. So I do know it's been in effect for quite a while. I have polled several of the counties, and one of the big questions was the compounding. As was indicated, there are several counties that their computer systems calculate the overpayment, but they have to manually calculate the interest on the refund, and that was a concern using a compounded rate and the difficulty in doing that. I think the counties would prefer to try to keep it at simple interest, which is typically how we calculate any kind of interest. I think some of the discussion was talking about the amount of interest refund. I think typically what we see is if you have a large business that fails, in our county, Komatsu would be a real good one. It was a very large company. There was quite a bit of tax. So when they close the doors, the first person they call is their attorney and say, hey, you need to file an appeal. So they're immediately going to try to get funds back into the company so that they can close out. So whenever you see a large appeal like that, and I think Gary can tell you a little bit about the ones in Multnomah County, that's where you're seeing an awful large amount of refund because we are talking about large values and large dollars. Most of the time, the refunds are on property tax appeals that go to the board. You're appealing your market value, which because of Measure 50 is usually quite a bit more than your assessed value. So in order to even get a refund, you would have to appeal below that assessed value before that would kick in. In some counties, I'm sure that the assessed value and the market value are one and the same, and so that would kick in an interest refund. New construction, when that comes on the roll, if you are successfully appeal that exception value, you would also receive a refund. But I think what we're talking about are the large companies that come in and can get a fairly substantial refund. Some of the utilities might go back 2 or 3 years. But the counties, if we could get this down to where it was a simple calculation, I think everybody would be extremely happy over that. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll let Gary has a few other comments. So.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bartholomew, speaking for the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors, and I'm employed at Multnomah County. In regards to the bill, I mainly want to make one comment. If we're going to set a different rate, I might suggest that you might consider some type of language that would set it at maybe at the nearest 0.25%. And also, it's not unheard of sometimes to set a tolerance level so that when you go back, in the case of this bill, and look at the average commercial prime rate over the last year, if the rate hasn't changed by more than a tolerance level of 0.25%, 0.5%, I think state income tax, they change their rate. I think they use 1%. So in that case, counties might not even have to change their rate every year. What I'm saying is really that if we had 4.25% the first year, we're wondering if there's a need to go to 4.26% the next year.
Do you know, are we out of line with other states? Is the 12% that we refund, or our counties refund, is that higher than most of your colleagues in other states? Is it lower? Are we in the middle?
Chair Deckard, I'm glad I looked into this a little bit. I went on the Internet and looked at several states, and Washington on refunds pays a rate at the 26-week Treasury bill rate, which I think right now is only a couple percent. Huh. And the state of California, the interest they pay on refunds is set at the greater of 3% or the county pool rate, which that's around 2% right now, I think, too, for county. So. Also, they do charge a delinquent interest similar to the rate that we charge in the state. Different states have different schemes. Some of them charge a penalty in addition to interest. So, but when you look at the whole, it's somewhat similar. So, that was mostly what I wanted to comment on. We're not really, you know, we're just here to talk from the tax collector's viewpoint about how the bill would affect us and what it would take to implement it. If there's other questions, or I have other information and experience in Multnomah County, if you're interested, of the refunds and the amount of interest that we're paying.
Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd just ask if there's any kind of a sense of proportionality between interest charged and interest paid. In other words, we pay on refunds, we charge for delinquents. What's the differential now?
Chair Deckard, Senator Farrelly, the current rate by statute in 311.505 on delinquencies is 1 1/3% per month.
So it's 18% annually, or close
to 16%.
16%
annually.
So we charge 16, and we're proposing to pay 2.
I believe the bill says 4.25, but.
But if we indexed it to the prime or the Treasury bills, it would be half that rate.
I believe that presently the prime is 4.25 right now, and I looked at prime rates in regards to the 12%. The prime rate has only been above 12% in 5 years since the Depression.
So, apparently,
it's just the idea of I think there's a sense of proportionality that people will think about when they think about this legislation, and 12% is in a rough proportion to 16. You know, if we're charging 16 and we're paying 12, there's a rough proportionality there. If we reduce our rate to 4.5% and leave our charge rate at 16, you know, the argument would be that we're incenting people to pay the dollars that they owe government by charging them a penalty, which is an interest rate. Mm-hmm. And the question that I think taxpayers will ask is, well, why doesn't that work in reverse when you're trying to get your money out of the state agencies or the federal or the county agencies? So perhaps you have an answer for that for me. I know I'm going to get asked that question.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I guess the way our interest rate works, when you say 16%, that sounds like quite a bit, but it's calculated at 1 1/3% each month as the third becomes past due. So on November the 16th, the only interest that's being charged is 1 1/3%. The full 16% doesn't kick in until about December, which means that tax is now 12 months past due. I mean, there's 12 months that have gone by since a payment has been made to the taxing districts, and these are services that have been voted for by the people that said that, yes, you know, we want these services and this is how we're going to pay for them. At the end of that first year, our collection rate is probably 95-96%.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, how do you do your compounding? Is it daily compound?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, we don't compound interest. It's simple.
It's just simple interest.
Just simple interest. Mm-hmm.
So I still don't know if I have an answer to give constituents who may ask, how is it that you can, on an annual basis, annualized basis, be charging 16 and on an annualized basis be paying 4.5.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I guess I'll tell you what I tell the taxpayers when they ask me, or else can you go and not make a payment for 12 months and still receive the service, and the only downside is that you've paid interest.
Mr. Chairman, I would direct them to any furniture store in the area.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, but you missed that by one date, and you have quite a substantial amount of interest, yeah. If you haven't paid for a full year.
And
Senator Farioli.
If you miss enough payments, you'll have trouble finding your furniture.
That's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'd be shocked if you'd ever consider.
So my question is, could you get, based on Senator Farioli's point, it seems to me for simplicity it should be symmetry. Whatever, on the one hand, and I don't know if this bill can get you there, but whatever you would have to pay on the one hand is what you should be charged, so that there is some level of consistency and symmetry of both ends of the spectrum.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you, but I would argue that there's proportionality into the symmetry. I think there is a differential that just shouldn't be 10 points, or 12 in this case.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, I guess really we didn't sponsor the bill.
We're just asking for professional guidance.
So. You know, this is what we've been administering for quite a while. We get the questions about the interest all the time. I guess it would be, I can tell you in Washington County, we refund historically around $130,000 a year, but then you always have the option of having a large refund where, yeah, the interest kind of gets up there and it could be over a couple of years, and I don't know where else you can go right now to invest your money and get that kind of a rate of return.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Farioli.
Thank you for reminding me that you're not the bill sponsor. Just the point is that I know you get to talk to a lot of highly motivated public and sometimes at great volume, and I just value the experience you had in answering those questions, because we'll all get them.
Sure.
Thank you.
So if you did go to that balance system or symmetry, what would the 12% we moved in this bill in line, what, 22 on Senate Bill 556, it moves to the prime, which is 4.25. What would that figure be if you had complete balance?
Senator Deckard, are you talking in regards to the present differential?
Exactly, yes.
So that we'd be 12/16 or 75%. So, I don't know, 5.5% or so. One thing I could say as far as the differential, I've mentioned a couple other states and they have that differential. Keep in mind that many years ago, I was real young, but my brother, I know he went to one of those classes on back when the rates were much lower in Oregon. At one time, they were as low as 6%, I believe, was the delinquent interest rate in Oregon. And when you went to the training on how to get rich in the real estate market and buying for nothing down, they recommended not to pay your property taxes and use that money to buy more properties. Mm-hmm. So there's that consideration of if you were to lower the delinquent interest to the point where it becomes a way to borrow money without, you know, having to get a loan approval.
Yeah.
But we're, like I said, not our bill. We're not here to advocate. There is also some funding that the legislature provided that's included in the interest that they call the assessment and taxation funding. You might be aware of. So that was a decision the legislature has made in the past. And we don't have a penalty like some states, so it's only the interest alone. But.
Nathan. Mr. Chair, there is a 4% of that 16 that is dedicated to funding certain assessment functions within the county. And that's probably how that differential in essence was arrived at. But there is certain funding needs for county assessments and so forth. And is that something? Am I close?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yes, you are correct. A portion of the interest we collect does go into the A&T fund, which is used to fund assessment and taxation functions, as well as the Department of Revenue to help administer the laws that are out there. So some of that interest does come back into the county.
That's okay. Anything further on Senate Bill 556? Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. close the public hearing on Senate Bill 556. And open a public hearing on Senate Bill 229, which is the same issue in reverse.
In reverse.
Mazin, excuse me.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to get your memory going with Senate Bill 229, we have heard the bill and some discussions of it on the 18th of February. Senate Bill 229 does work in the other side of the equation of the delinquencies. What it says is if you go to the tax court and or the Board of Property Tax, you would, and that body finds that you owe more on your taxes than you have actually paid, you need to bring your payment into line in the 16th of the next month, and if that is done, no interest will be assessed on the added amounts of taxes. However, if that is not done, then the taxes, interest will start kicking in. Previous to this amendment, it was the law was allowing for the extra taxes to be paid until the next year's assessment, which sometimes took about 5 to 15 months, depending on one when that happens. When we heard this the first time, there was a concern that this might blanket a larger spectrum of payments than the bill might have intended. So we have the Dash 1 amendment, and the Dash 1 amendments speak to this issue to make it more crisp, if you will, or more specific in defining which affected by putting the amendments on 311-205. It defines that it is the tax court, and it is the number D in 311-205. I've put in your packet reference to 311-205 to see section D and which section applies. And in this section, that one that applies is the officer shall make any change ordered by the tax court or the Department of Revenue under ORS 305-288 and 306-115. I've added all these sections of the ORSs for your reference here. And this, I think, probably does the trick or the attempt that we were thinking that it needs to make it more focused in that sense. There was also a concern by the chairman, by you, Mr. Chair, about the having the last section of the bill talk about the application when it is effective, that it applies to cases that are resolved.
That's fine.
Which means that if they're resolved at that time, even if they started before, that they will get that treatment. However, this was changed in 229-2s into initiated, which means you have to initiate after that application date in order for this case to take that treatment. Again, this does make a small revenue impact, positive impact for counties, for the taxing districts. Because it brings the amounts of payment faster when the judgment happens, and the second source of the revenue is or comes from having to accumulate interest if the payments are not done.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Corcoran.
Are we in work session?
I don't. John, do you, I think we're in a public hearing. John, did you want to say anything? I think we're probably ready to go.
He doesn't have anything to say.
Senator Hannon, you've had a chance on the dash one.
Yeah, that's
fine.
That
was your concern.
That's fine. Okay. The only question I would ask, Mr. Chairman, is this the same interest rate that we were just talking in the previous, or is this a different interest rate?
Senator Hannon, actually it is the same interest rate, but it's on the reverse.
Side.
This would be the interest that will be assessed to the delinquent taxes rather than the overpayment or the refund.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
But it
is there any reason why the interest rate should not be increased as a deterrent to be this, or is this usually typically a clerical error by the county assessor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I think this would still be assessed the interest at the higher level, at the 16%, which is not adjusted by the previous Senate Bill 5.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
These are the other side of the equation.
Okay.
We're going to move it.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine if you want to move these. Both of them are.
I will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 229. We would need both amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move dash one amendments, 229.
Senator Corcoran has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 229. Any discussion? Any objection? So
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move dash two amendments, 229.
Senator Corcoran has moved the dash two amendments. Any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move 229 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation if Senator Starr will carry it.
Senator.
I think you're going to run into a constitutional problem.
Senator Corcoran has moved Senate Bill 229 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Corcoran, would you like to carry this bill?
Damn, here I help you. Maybe you make me carry the bill. Yeah, fine.
Thank you. John, thanks for all your work on this. Appreciate the time that you put in on getting those amendments drafted and listening to our concerns. With that, we are done for the week. Thank you very much.
All right.